You are listening to We the People Radio. This is our second hour here with Dr. Philip Drumm, and trying to give you some information that you probably aren't getting. You're definitely not getting it from the marijuana industry.
No.
And not getting it from the media. And apparently, depending on where you live, you're not getting it from the legal.
And what you are getting is a lot of misinformation as well.
I believe we call that propaganda.
Yes.
It's very popular these days. Maybe all that talk about Russian was really to help us figure out about propaganda.
Yeah, could be.
So anyway, just in case you missed the first hour and you have no clue who you're listening to, my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And when we're all in the same room, really good music comes out because that's Bob's job. And Bill and I just, you know, sit on the sidelines.
I juggle.
Over here on the dumb side. Anyway, all right, speeding back to our guests so we don't run out of we'll run out of time anyway. It's just a given. Okay, so Dr. Drumm, continue the story for us.
Okay, first I'd like to give a shout-out. You played a great song on the Going Out. A good friend of mine, I don't know, a lot of people know this, he's known as Kevin the Bass. I played with Kevin softball when I was working down in Southern California. His name's Kevin Dorsey. He's the oh yeah guy.
He is.
Oh no, yeah. No fooling.
We play that every single week. Yeah. We love that.
Yeah. So his name's Kevin Dorsey. So shout out to Kevin.
That's God. Awesome. What are the odds of that?
So anyway, I kind of had a bad feeling. My brother actually warned me and said that, you know, this is going to be a sham of justice up there, and he wouldn't go. He refused to go. So it was just my mom and I that went up there. My mom, my 84 year old mother at the time, who's now 88, and you know, I kind of had a wary feeling because I knew how long it took for those clowns up there to find the Green River Killer, and you know, they never caught Bundy up there. They caught him in Florida.
Right.
And so, you know, I kind of knew, you know, I started to realize, you know, I'm dealing with a bunch of incompetence, especially when I started finding out they never tested the marijuana. They never did a Carfax to find out where he had taken his car in. And
yeah.
So back to the courtroom, again, the judge threw out all the evidence, claiming her justification was because of the DRE officer. We were told in no uncertain circumstances on Friday, this was before Monday when she made her final decision. On Friday, we went and met with the DA. Again, the DA's underlings are actually the ones handling the cases. And so the DA, we met with him face-to-face, and we said, you know, we have very serious concerns. We know that this judge is ranked 50 out of 52. We know that she is done racial type of activities. She has a picture of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X in her courtroom above the jury box. And this is a black defendant, and we're white, and the judge is black as well. And so, you know, we knew all this information. We knew how the DA's office had looked at her as being, you know, incompetent and not knowing the facts of law. And so we were assured, well, what's going to happen on Monday with either decision, if she rules for the defense and throws out all the evidence, then we're going to go to an appeals court. And if she goes with it, then the defense keeps the evidence, then the blood evidence and the marijuana, et cetera, then the defense is probably going to ask for an appeal. And so either way, this is probably going to go to an appeals court for decision. And what ends up happening is she makes the decision. We get on the elevator. We go down to the floor of the DA's office, and the DA turns around to my mother and I and goes, well, we just lost the appeals case. And I looked at her and said, what? And she said, oh, yeah, the decision that she made in not trusting the officer's activities, we can't appeal that.
Mm.
And so I looked at her and I said, my brother warned me that this would be a sham of justice. This just became a sham of justice. And I am leaving. And if I'm leaving, my 84-year-old mother is leaving as well. And you'll be conducting this case without the family. And we left.
Wow. I bet that was a hard
case. We later find out that he was found guilty by jury trial. And I said, so he's in jail now. Oh, well, no, the judge let him until tomorrow come up with bail. What's bail set at? $100,000. Yeah. So I said, so I expect to hear from you on Thursday, this is on Wednesday when the jury came down with their verdict, on Thursday at 12 noon that he's in jail or he's paid his $10,000. So I hear nothing on Thursday. I call him on Friday. Why didn't I hear from you yesterday? Well, he did come in. I said, where are the sheriffs going to drive to his house to pick him up? Oh, well, today. Well, we'll go do it today. So he spends the weekend in jail, doesn't like that, and comes up with $10,000 for like 2.5 weeks until sentencing. So he paid $10,000 so he could be out. So we get there for sentencing. My mother and I fly back up there, and he shows up 20 minutes late. We're all standing there. The judge is standing there in the doorway looking, and I'm just going, I'm not paying to come up here again.
Yeah, no kidding.
Said it's all her fault that she let him go out on bail, that we're all waiting. And so finally proceed to, he shows up, obviously stoned. Last time he was going to be able to use his marijuana in a while, maybe. I don't know what they do in their court system up there. And so anyway, shows up and he's sitting there and he's crying and, you know, carrying on like he normally would. And so then it was given to my mother first to speak. Oh, and we were warned by the judge, you're not to look at him. Have you ever seen that in court systems
what do you
before?
Mean you can't look at him.
Don't look at him.
You cannot look at him. She says, you have to look at me, the judge said. You have to look at me. So my mother proceeds to talk, starts breaking down, and she looks over at him. Judge gavels, I told you you're not to look at him. To my 84-year-old mother.
Whose daughter was killed by him.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
So she goes, looks over and starts speaking back to the judge. I'm done now, I'm done. So then it's my time to get up. So I get up there and start talking, telling the history of Rosemary, because again, this is all about him. The whole trial is all about him. There's nothing about Rosemary. It's all about him. So I have to make the judge understand who he killed, who he took from this, who he took from Earth. And I'm telling her this, and she's of course looking down, and she's scribbling things on a big pad of paper. And he's standing behind me, so that way there's no way I was going to be looking at him. I was looking right at her. I was like 5 feet away from her, eyeing her all the time, and she of course was looking down, wouldn't look at me. And so when I started naming names, like her good friend Judge Ronald Kessler, who is the head of their superior court, and said that he lowered the bail, all of a sudden she breaks in there and she goes, wait, when are you going to be done?
No.
And I looked at her and I said, Judge, he showed up 20 minutes late.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, there's other people that want to speak, and you're using up their time. I said, okay. So then, hurriedly went through things. Of course, I couldn't point out to her that, you know, we have high suspicions of her because of the fact that she let him use the marijuana and that she turned around and threw out the marijuana and all the evidence, because I didn't know what she was going to do. I didn't know if she was going to give him a day in jail and let him go. I didn't know. So I couldn't say anything. The jury box was filled with media because I had called them and notified them and let them know to be there. And they were there, filled up the jury box. So anyway, one other thing that had happened during the court session, actually two other things. So my sister's a friend from work spoke, a person from the neighborhood spoke, and then it was the assault victim was able to speak, and she was too fearful. The reason why she was fearful was during the court trial, the DA asked her, what did this do to you? What did this event end up having to do to you? You know, what impact did this have on your life? Is that a yes or no question? Mm-hmm. Of course not. So she couldn't answer yes or no. So she said, she went on and said, you know, this has really affected my life. My arm was broken. I've had it set a couple times. My teeth were broken out. She said, you know, and I had to pay for this because he had no insurance on his car. You know, oh, I want a mistrial. The defense says they weren't supposed to know about that because the judge suppressed that evidence.
Why?
That he had no insurance on the car. Prejudicial Everything was, he was a golden child walking into that courtroom.
No kidding.
So they had a conference, and they ended up having to, they ended up deciding, well, they weren't going to start all over again and call a mistrial, that the jury was just instructed to just disregard that and forget the fact that he had no insurance on his car. And the judge warned and reprimanded the victim, the assault victim, at the end of the trial when they came back and said he was guilty of the only charge that they, you know, that they could do other than saying he was innocent, that he was guilty of reckless driving, 4.5 year sentence was what would be up for, imposing. She after the jury verdict comes back, she looks out into the audience and tells the assault victim to get out of her courtroom now, that she's not to speak to the jury, get off the ninth floor, get out of the building. The assault victim.
Holy cow.
God, this is
so she goes out of the courtroom. She's shaking. Okay. She's calling her friend to tell him what just happened. The DA walked out of the room and goes, "You got to get off this floor. The judge told you to get out of the courtroom, get out of the courthouse." And escorts her out and gets her out of, you know, gets it onto her elevator and get out of there. So she didn't really want to talk in front of this judge. So she had her her partner get up there and speak on behalf of her. Because she was too frightened. She thought the judge was going to throw her in jail for anything she said she didn't know during sentencing. Wow. So that's how we were intimidated. He ends up getting a 4.5 year sentence. He spends less than 3 years, a little over 2 years, in jail for killing my sister. The assault victim's charge of 1.5 years ends up going in combination, so not consecutive, but during concurrent. So he didn't spend any time for the assault victim.
Hmm.
And so, he's already out. He's out. He's out probably, you know, my brother's seen $1.70 or something like that he's paid, in which he owes over $20,000.
Wow. So,
and I think we've gotten a whopping $1.70 from him, and he's out in the streets.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take another quick break here, Dr. Phil. When we come back, let's talk about what's happened since then. They've made it legal, and has the court system improved, or has it become...
Yeah, and how are we testing for this? We've legalized a drug that causes, you know, behavioral and mental and all that, and you have a lot of information about that, so we have that, and we also have we have somebody who has a question for you on the phone. So, you know, we're stacked up here. There's a lot going on. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Philip Drum, and... Man, we're talking about marijuana. Probably the story that you've never heard. This isn't what is normally talked about. Normally it's all rosy and sunshine. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted. I got stoned and it rolled right by, rolled on by. I got stoned and I missed it. I got stoned and I missed it. I got stoned. Oh me, oh my.
That's interesting timing on that little song. Dr. Drum, I have somebody in the chat room who's pretty convinced that marijuana is a stimulant. So is it?
It's a hallucinogen.
So it's not a stimulant or a depressant. It's in a different category.
No, that's correct. It's in a different category. It's a hallucinogen. And it does have stimulant qualities like the tachycardia, their increased heart rate, and the hypertension, high blood pressure that it caused in the murder. So it does have stimulant properties, physiologic properties to the body. But it is not deemed a stimulant. It's deemed a hallucinogen.
Okay.
It makes you hallucinate.
Lovely. All right, Lori has had a couple of questions for you. She was curious if you got to make a victim statement, and unfortunately she was in the cone of silence while you were actually answering that part.
Yeah, but, I did, and again, was truncated as a result of the Judge Monica Benton, and I also did file a judicial complaint to the state over Judge Monica Benton, and they held it for a year, and then they sat back and said, oh, we see no problems.
Of course not.
And it was like 12 pages long of all the activities and how she failed to do her job and she was breaking the law.
Jeez. All right, Lori, what other question did you have for him?
Yeah, oh, I'm so sorry I missed that part of it in that little
sorry.
little zone. Thank you, Aaron and Bill, for presenting this topic. And to Dr. Phil, I am just so crushed to hear how awful this is sounding every minute that goes by. My insertion here is locally on our past Friday here, we had a city council meeting in Redding, California, 3 hours long, part one of what might be another follow-up. Four people on a panel to investigate and review the pros and cons of medical marijuana and recreational marijuana. The bulk of the people that showed up at the podium for their three-minute allotted time were disruptive, rude, condescending, ill-informed, and just despicable. I just was stunned at the level of the shout-outs. And, Aaron, I know you've been to some of these things with Doug LaMalfa and some of our other political people, and it gets people nowhere.
Right.
It's completely disruptive. So that is what I endured Friday for 3 hours. They videotaped it, as they always do on the City of Reading website, and people can watch. I spoke for 3 minutes on my allotted time, but there were people that needed someone to be escorted out, and people were begging for some of these pro-pot marijuana people that were completely, man, it was 4:20 and they should have left a few minutes earlier to I don't know what.
This is happening all over the state. This is happening all over the state.
Yeah, it's...
The cities are having their own evaluation, and this is exactly what's happening all over the state.
Well, and as soon as they legalize it, then all of a sudden everybody's got to jump through all these hoops and figure out what that means in their
right.
community, or, like we see up here, you know, we have bunches of people up in Siskiyou County that have come from Minnesota to grow
yep.
pot.
Well, you have them coming from Russia.
I'll let you go, but
Russia,
I really appreciate
Cuba
this because this
well.
Is a larger issue, a bigger vision that the federal government is probably using this as a beta test to see what
yeah.
Washington, California, Colorado, they're watching, looking, monitoring, and surveilling so that they can possibly snatch it all up, the land, the profit, take over, Big Pharma, and Monsanto. So that's my FYI to people who think this is going to save their life financially and they're going to feel great, wonderful, and life is just a bowl of cherries. So.
Yeah, epic fail. Hey, thanks for that, Lori.
Oh, my God. I look forward to the other callers, and thank you and appreciate you and pray for your family and everyone else, Dr. Phil Drum, D-R-U-M. I looked it
yeah.
up.
yeah.
All right, thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Lori.
Thanks, Lori.
All right. I don't know. You know, the whole pro-marijuana thing has gotten into this. They've really got people, I don't know, either silenced or just confused because there's so much weird data out there. Can you do some debunking for us?
Sure.
Since you have tons,
sure.
Tons of that.
Again, reality land is we had Delta-9 THC since 1985. I was, you know, in total shock and would never have believed in 1996 that people would be stupid enough to have approved this. Because saying, you know, where's the medicine people, or why aren't people out, why isn't the media letting medicine tell people the truth that we have Delta-9 THC, it's dronabinol. Now it's generic, it's been around so damn long. The reality is that we don't use dronabinol much anymore at all, and it's not even on the top three classes of drugs to use for nausea and vomiting. We've gotten much better drugs that have come out in the early 90s and then later in early 2000s that do wonderful jobs for nausea and vomiting due to chemotherapy. As for the AIDS appetite stimulation, again, this was a major push, you have to understand, from the AIDS community in the early 80s, back when we had no drug treatment, until we finally got AZT in 88 and 89. And now we received in the mid-90s a class of drugs called the protease inhibitors, and we've gotten drugs in the early 2000s of the integrase inhibitors that have now turned HIV essentially into like a chronic disease, like diabetes. And so there's no need for the appetite stimulation from marijuana, because I'm sure a lot of you, the older people, remember what we saw of those AIDS patients in the 80s, all very, what we call cachectic. They're very skinny. They look like they were from Dachau and Auschwitz.
Yeah.
That's what they looked like, because they were having so many ravages of multiple diseases, of multiple infectious diseases. And again, I saw these patients. These were my patients that I had as an oncology pharmacist. So when I worked in a hospital, these were the patients that I took care of, the cancer patients and the AIDS patients. And again, used marijuana, and I'll never forget, or Marinol, I'll never forget the first patient I gave it to. Never. It was when I did my residency in Illinois in the mid-80s, and we used it on an 84-year-old woman that had breast cancer that we gave Adriamycin. It's known as Red Death because it causes a lot of damage. It causes a lot of nausea and vomiting really bad, but it also suppresses your bone marrow and immune system. And so the doctors, anytime a new drug comes out, oh, I want to use it, I want to use it, I want to use it. And so we used it. And again, it comes in 2.5 milligram, 5 milligram, and 10 milligram capsules. And I said, based on her age, let's use 2.5 milligrams. And you can repeat it if you need it in 4 hours. Well, the nurses automatically gave it to her in 4 hours. She wasn't vomiting, but she was hallucinating to beat the band. And we walked in the next morning, and the nurses looked like they had seen a ghost. And I remember asking the nurse, what's going on? And she said, well, we've had a major problem all night with her. And it's like, well, why? And it's, I think it's that damn dronabinol. She was hallucinating all night. And so we walked in there, and by this time she was lucid. And she told us, whatever you gave me, don't ever give that to me again. I'd rather throw up all night than feel like that. Mm. That was my first patient that got dronabinol from the FDA.
Wow. Is it a smaller dose now or something?
No. In fact, I was just looking around on Weedmaps, and I just found a 1,000-milligram dose being sold for $50.
What?
1,000 milligrams.
And
the maximum FDA-approved dose is 10 milligrams.
Wow.
That's what these idiots are selling out there, along with their butane, hash oil remnants, 2,4-dibutadiene, which is a carcinogen and known mutagen. That's in all of their edibles. They're desperately now trying to get these things out. But, of course, now they're going to have to use much more expensive chemicals to do this.
Right.
So, again, your black market's just thriving in Colorado.
Yeah, making it illegal.
Because the price of this is going up.
Yeah, making it legal isn't going to get rid of the black market at all. I think, if anything, it's going to make it bigger.
Absolutely.
Because the government's going to be involved. They're going to tax the heck out of it.
That's right.
And if you can buy it cheaper on the black market and have it in your possession with no penalty.
You can't prove where it came from.
You can't prove where it came from. Then
right.
people are going to go that route. And I think
and
Colorado...
Yeah, the seed-to-sale concept in Colorado that we're gonna track it from seed until it's... That's breaking down. That's not working.
No,
they can't do that.
No.
I mean, are they doing that with bell peppers?
Yeah. No.
Seed-to-sale, really?
Well, I think the governor of Colorado has come out publicly and stated that he realizes now he's made a huge mistake by
letting... Well, it depends on what day you're talking to Hick and Doper, whether it's on a Monday or a Friday, you know, and who he's talking to.
Well, he probably visited Nevada and couldn't get any, so, you know.
State
of emergency.
Well, that's an interesting concept, too, on how they've allowed the alcohol industry to do the distribution for 18 months, and all of a sudden, wow, there's not enough drug around. Because the alcohol industry is doing the distribution. Their major concern in Colorado was, what's going to happen to our beer and alcohol sales in Colorado? Well, they found out it actually went up after recreational or hallucinating marijuana became a market. So they got what they wanted, and they backed off, although I don't think they're as trusting of that yet in Nevada until they see it.
Yeah, that's a huge lobby.
We've got to take a really quick break here again, and we have a caller on the line for you when we come back. And so, everybody, stay where you are. We'll be right back. 2 minutes. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
We don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee. We don't take our trips on LSD. We don't burn our draft cards down on Main Street. 'Cause we like living right and being free. It's getting hard to wake up in the morning. My head is spinning. How could I be so blind with this again?
Okay, so we don't have to keep you hostage too much longer. Billy Bob, you had a question or a comment for Dr. Drum?
Billy Bob?
Is he in there?
Oh.
Oh, we had to flip the secret switch.
Hello, are you there?
Yeah, there you go.
Go ahead, Billy Bob, you're on.
Aaron, okay, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, listen, I had to weigh in. I really appreciate the passion and dedication that your guest has had and the suffering he's had to go through in the death of his daughter, I guess. But there's no excuse for that. And all I got to say is that in the greater overall sense of this situation, which you're talking about, which is marijuana, I've been around this marijuana for 45 years. I don't understand why all of a sudden you get one crazy guy that causes all the grief and dismay to this one individual. And shit, he had a rap sheet probably as long as his arm. Who knows? But the point of it is that you can't just put this in one nutshell. It's going to be around here. It is a great medicinal drug. I don't care who they are, and you're a medical doctor. I understand that. But hey, it's not what everybody's making it out to be. And there's a few crazies out there. It's just like with alcohol. It's just like with guns. It's just like, you know, terrorists.
Okay.
Everything's got its extremes.
All righty. Well, let's let him address that. Thanks for calling.
Sure. Again, we're talking medicine here, and medicine goes through the Food and Drug Administration, and there's no drug out there that has 60 chemicals in a product, okay, which is what we're talking about with marijuana, having 60 chemicals in the product. We have drug-drug interactions that interact with other medications that we have to be sure as to which of the chemicals is causing problems. And so, therefore, you don't have 60 chemicals in a medicine. That's just completely unheard of and ridiculous. And I'd love to talk about Salman Abedi, who's the Manchester, England bomber, who was had erratic behavior for 5 years before he bombed there, knowing to have been smoking marijuana and mixing with gangs. How about Richard Rojas, who was a troubled man with a history of drunken driving, bolted from his maroon Honda Accord after he smashed into 20 people in Times Square in May. About the Washington Cascade mall shooter, Arkan Seated, who blamed his cannabis for his behavior. How about Omar Mateen, the Orlando nightclub shooter, admitting to using marijuana and steroids? How about Robert Deere, who shot people at the Planned Parenthood in Colorado in November of 2015? How about Brasim Abdeslam, the Paris bomber, who was known to be being a marijuana dealer from his cafe in Molenbeek, Brussels? How about Jody Herring, the mother on THC pills for pain, who shot and killed a Vermont social worker and two others? How about the Chattanooga, Tennessee shooter, Mohammed Albedizi, who killed four Marines and a sailor, who was a known heavy user of marijuana? How about Dylan Roof, who shoots 9 parishioners dead in Charleston, South Carolina, and was an admitted marijuana user with schizophrenia? How about Richard Kirk in Colorado, the father of 3, who shoots his wife in the head while she's on the phone talking to a 911 operator after eating marijuana-laced candy for the first time? How about the mall in Columbia, Maryland shooter, Darren Aguilar, who killed 2 and then himself, a known marijuana user? How about the Boston bombers, the Tsarnaev brothers, who are heavy marijuana users? You know, do I need to continue? I can. Tucson Massacre shooter, Jared Loughner, who was a habitual pot user before he shot Gabrielle Giffords in the head. I mean, I could keep going. Pentagon shooter John Bendel, history of mental illness and marijuana use. The Aurora, Colorado theater shooter, John Holmes, was reported to be a marijuana user. Jacob T. Roberts in Clackamas Town Center, Oregon, who killed 2 people and seriously injured 1 in December 2012 and then killed himself, with a chronic marijuana user since age 16. This is not to be used in people with mental health disorders, especially those that have PTSD. Studies are already out there that have proven and shown this makes the PTSD worse. The data's out there.
Well, and it's very hard to control the dosage. But to go back to the list you just read, lots of those I didn't know, and I guess that was my point. They don't test for it, and because there is no uniformity here, they don't test for it, so it doesn't come out, and it's not part of the equation. So we're not actually getting...
That's right.
We're not getting the truth about this.
You know, that's right. Recently it came out that the DUID, driving under influence of drugs, has exceeded driving under the influence of alcohol, and that's combining all drugs. But the leading drug after alcohol since 2006 involved in fatal crashes is marijuana. Since 2006, it is the agent after alcohol. And we've done some research recently to look at the number of innocents being killed. Here's some other data that I've gotten recently to share with your audience. The peak time, I think most people recognize this, for alcohol driving fatalities to occur is 10 p.m. to about 2 a.m.
Sure.
When the bars close.
Bars close, right.
Right? So that makes sense to a lot of people. What's the peak time for marijuana driving fatalities?
You told
probably
me.
After 5?
4 to 8 p.m. when these people are getting off of work.
Sure.
That is rush hour traffic.
Yeah, and the odds
and
are higher.
If you want to add alcohol, which I said, marijuana doubles the risk of a driving fatality. Add a little alcohol, just a little, a beer with that bong hit, and you now have an eightfold increase of being involved in a fatal traffic incident, and that occurs from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. because it takes people a couple hours to go to the bar, get loaded, and then get back into their cars and try and drive home. There's also a spike in the morning between 6 and 8 a.m. when people are driving to work because people aren't consuming at work. They're consuming before and after work. Because they're addicted, they have to do it. Whereas for alcohol, the driving fatality rates climb, of course, on the weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights. There's a slight peak on Saturdays, but for the most part, it's consistent every day because marijuana, the hallucinogen, is an addictive substance that has to be used every day.
Right.
Unbelievable. And the industry doesn't want any of this to come out. They I would imagine the marijuana industry, just kind of in general, and it's, I know, I realize it's got a wide range, but they probably are not big fans of a national standard like we have the alcohol impairment standard.
Right.
Probably
right.
Not.
Well, because they're willing to let the states have their own various haphazard level. And so the state of Colorado actually has the worst limit. People say, oh, it's the level's 5. No, it's not. It's a presumed, it's a presumptive inference or something. It's a joke. And in fact, a senator in our state is now attempting to adopt that exact same language here in California. Let me just pull up that bill to let everybody know and to let your people here in the state to make sure that this bill goes down to defeat. Right now it's kind of in limbo and it's just hanging there. But it's SB 698 by Senator Hill, and he has no co-authors, interestingly. And so they're trying to create they would have to require a person to fail field sobriety tests to establish probable cause for a chemical test to test the person's blood, and that's what they have to do already anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was added to the bill recently. But they wanted to change it to, they wanted to lower the blood alcohol to 0.04 to 0.7, would be a rebuttable presumption for alcohol, and that a rebuttable presumption that a person had a 5 nanogram per ml or more Delta-9 THC in his blood. That's what Colorado has, is what's called a rebuttable presumption. And I could cite a case in which a girl failed her field sobriety test. That should have been enough.
Right.
But had a blood level of 19, goes before a jury of her pothead peers, and they find her not guilty.
Wow.
Because you have a rebuttable presumption in the state of Colorado. Now, different in the state of Washington, because when they approved I-502, they wisely at least put some type of driving limit. But unfortunately, it's a level of 5 nanograms per ml. It's a per se limit, just like our blood level for alcohol is a per se limit, meaning you're guilty if you're at that value or greater.
The problem, as I told you, is that after 2 hours, your level's usually 2. After 1 hour, your level's usually 5. Okay, so if you're not getting blood drawn within an hour, you're not going to be found guilty in the state of Washington. And the state of Washington also now delayed and makes them have to get a warrant to draw somebody's blood.
Well, that takes time.
In the state of Washington. How do you like that?
Yeah, that ought to give them just about enough time.
So that'll give them enough time. Yeah, it actually takes them 45 minutes.
Sure.
That came out in my sister's trial. They asked the judge, of course, asked him why he didn't get a warrant. And he reminded the judge at the time in July 17th of 2012, there was no requirement for a warrant. And that he could draw blood even if the guy was driving recklessly without his consent. Or if he killed somebody, which he did, or if he injured somebody, which he did. So he had all rights to draw the blood without his consent, even though he did have his consent. But now they're requiring everybody to, because it takes 45 minutes, they know it's delaying. Guess who's behind these bills?
The marijuana industry. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Big shocker. All right. We've got to take one last really quick break before we get to the top of the hour. Sorry.
Yeah,
okay, when we come back, Bill's got a question.
Yeah.
And we have another hostage on hold who has a question for you. And we need another hour. Bottom line is we've got like 10 minutes, and it's not going to be enough. I'm disgruntled. We're here with Dr. Philip Drum talking about the dark side of marijuana and a lot of the stuff you probably haven't heard before. You can find this online this afternoon. You'll get an archive here right after the show at wethepeopleradio.us. Please share it with your friends.
Because I got high.
Go.
I lost my kids and wife because I got high.
Say what?
Now I'm sleeping on the sidewalk and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. La la la.
That'll need me say more. All right, so we don't keep her trapped in there. Thanks for waiting, Kay. Do you have a comment or a question for Dr. Drum?
Kay?
Hello?
Hey, there you are.
Oh. Well, hi, Aaron, Bill, and Dr. Phil. This has been great. It's only the sad part is it's too short.
It is too short.
We need to have him come up here and talk to us.
Yeah.
Where are you, how far away are you?
I'm in the Bay Area.
Yeah, so he's probably about 3.5 hours from us.
I've been working on the, there's somebody, a friend of our family's who has been taking opiates and marijuana for pain management. And now the doctors have already switched around and they give him 7 days to get off the opiates. And then they won't give them anything if they have a marijuana script or whether they've been taking marijuana or not. They don't seem to communicate to the patient, you know, and have a heart-to-heart talk about what's going on. And they didn't tell them before that if they had, okay, you have your choice. If you're going to be on marijuana, if you have the script, then we can't give you an opiate. So, I mean, there's just all kinds of problems.
All right. Well, maybe we can get him to address all that.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, Kay.
Keep up the good work.
Absolutely. Appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. Okay, so what about that? And, you know, where I see this the most is with our veteran population.
Right. Yeah, unfortunately, what the marijuana industry just won't absolutely address and come to reality with is marijuana is the gateway drug. It's I go and give talks with a Superior Court judge in San Joaquin County, and we link up with Folsom Prison and Chowchilla Prison for the men at Folsom and the women at Chowchilla, and go to junior high and high school kids. And they love to hear from the inmates. And the inmates will tell them, you get involved with alcohol and marijuana, and you're on your way to becoming a gang member and becoming an addict. We have addicts that come in as part of their time that they have to, you know, talk to the public about their addictions and their issues. And one of the interesting things that hit me one day was one of the addicts standing next to me said that the most difficult drug for him to get off of was marijuana.
Wow.
And it makes sense. It makes sense pharmacologically to me. All of a sudden it hit me. It was like, oh, of course. Because it's fat soluble. Your other drugs like heroin and opiates are water soluble. They will go through withdrawals from a water soluble drug within days. 3, 4, 5 days, they're going through withdrawals. Okay, methadone a little bit longer because it's got a longer half-life. But those drugs, they'll go through withdrawals quicker. You know how long it takes to start seeing withdrawals from marijuana in a true addict? Mm. 21 days.
Wow. Oh, wow.
There was a study done by Marilyn Hustis, who was at the National Institute of Health, and she brought people in that were 30 to 60 joint smokers a day.
Wow.
Jeez.
And she brought them in, hospitalized them, and she says she started losing them at around 18, 19, 20. Because, again, these people couldn't be held in the hospital. They were there voluntarily, and they quit the study because she was trying to find out how long does the THC and its metabolites stay in the body? How long does it take for it to leave the fat stores? And people were going through withdrawal. They couldn't sleep. They couldn't eat. They were going psychotic on days 18, 19, and 20.
Mm.
And all she had to do was give them a joint. That's what they did. They went on the outside. They smoked a joint, and they were back to being okay because their receptors were just craving this stuff. I just want to point out the toxicology found in Colorado suicides from 2009 to 2013 for 10 to 19-year-olds. 10 to 19-year-olds. The number one drug found in suicide victims in Colorado is marijuana, 16%. Alcohol is number two at 11%. Opioids was number three.
Wow.
At 5.7%. So, again, don't believe the lies of what you're hearing out there because, again, we want to go after the opiates. And then even the opiates, what are they claiming? Oh, you can use marijuana for that, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yep.
Like I said, just remember what I said. What drug has as many indications as marijuana has? There isn't one.
Hmm.
Question that, people. Like I said, aspirin is probably the closest to me, and again, I don't have them chew on a willow tree. Yes, we do have medications that come from plants, and we synthesize them, and we take them out of the plant. The Pacific yew tree was making our agent for ovarian and breast cancer. We've synthesized it. We don't use the yew tree anymore to create our paclitaxel.
With Colorado being, I think, the state that's had legalized marijuana, one of the states that's been the longest.
They're in Washington in 2012.
Right. Now, do you have any numbers on, and I'm sorry, we only got a couple of minutes left here, but as far as the revenue to the state, that was one of the big selling points was they were going to make money on it.
It's kind of like the California lottery was going to fund the schools.
Yeah, have they made money or are they making money on this?
Well, they're getting tax dollars. Are they making money? No. They're in a budget deficit in the state of Colorado, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So their marijuana is not bringing in their tax dollars to keep out a budget deficit. And here's reality land. Department of Transportation came out in 2010 and estimated the cost of a driving fatality to be $1.4 million per driving fatality. Okay, $1.4 million. That was the loss in income to the person. That was the cost of hospitalizations, the cost of the police, the cost of insurance, everything. $1.4 million per driving fatality. Okay, in 2015, Colorado had 115 marijuana driving deaths.
Yeah, so
they took in $128 million. Now, if you give us a 3 to 4% increase in that $1.4 million, you're up to $1.6 million per driving fatality in 2015. okay? 1.6. Multiply that times 115. You're up to $180 million due to the marijuana driving deaths alone, and they took in 128.
Right.
The pot industry owes just for the driving deaths the state of Colorado $50 million more in 2015.
Ooh.
And this is not even looking at the increased number of hospitalizations, the increased number of emergency room visits, the increased number of addictions, the increased number of butane hash oil explosions that result in the need for skin grafting, the increased number of crime going on in the state.
Sure.
So legalizing it is going to be great because it's going to make us tons of money as a giant lie. God, what a shock.
I'm just like alcohol and tobacco, for $1 in tax, you spend 10 socially. Yeah.
Well, sounds like a great move.
Sounds like we're going to talk again.
Yeah. Yeah, we need to have you back on. We have so many more questions, and we're out of
time. More than willing.
Great.
Thank you so much.
More than willing to tell the truth.
Absolutely. Hey, and so for people out there, we'll have the archive up in like 10 minutes here on Sunday afternoon, and then a little bit later today we'll have it commercial free. Please post it on Facebook, shoot it out through Twitter, and let people know. And for our friends that are listening from overseas, we've got a lot of people like in Ukraine that listen. Don't be potheads,
don't
guys. I don't know if you have that over there, but don't do it. It's
we'll
a mess.
Accused of collusion.
Exactly. Love our Ukrainian guys. So anyway, thanks a lot, Dr. Drum. See you guys all next week. You've been listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.